Translation: the so-called administrators are now bewildered by the influence of this age of Kali, and thus they have put all state affairs into disorder. Are you now lamenting this disorder? Now the general populace does not follow the rules and regulations for eating, sleeping, drinking, mating, etc., and they're inclined to perform such anywhere and everywhere. Are you unhappy because of this? Purport: there are some necessities of life on a par with those of the lower animals, and they are eating, sleeping, fearing, and mating. These bodily demands are for both the human beings and the animals. But the human being has to fulfill such desires, not like animals, but like a human being. A dog can mate with a bitch before the public eyes without hesitation, but if a human being does so, the act will be considered a public nuisance, and the people will be criminally prosecuted. Therefore, for the human being, there are some rules and regulations, even for fulfilling common demands. The human society avoids such rules and regulations when it is bewildered by the influence of the age of Kali. In this age, people are indulging in such necessities of life without following the rules and regulations, and this deterioration of social and moral rules is certainly lamentable because of the harmful effects of such beastly behavior. In this age, the fathers and guardians are not happy with the behavior of their wards. They should know that so many innocent children are victims of bad association awarded by the influence of this age of Kali. We know from Srimad Bhagavatam that Ajamila, an innocent son of a Brahmana, was walking down a road and saw a Sudra pair sexually embracing. This attracted the boy, and later on the boy became a victim of all debaucheries. From a pure Brahmana, he fell down to the position of a wretched urchin, and it was all due to bad association. There was but one victim like Ajamila in those days, but in this age of Kali, the poor innocent students are daily victims of cinemas which attract men only for sex indulgence. The so-called administrators are all untrained in the affairs of a kshatriya. The kshatriyas are meant for administration, as brahmanas are meant for knowledge and guidance. The word kshatra bandhu refers to the so-called administrators, or persons promoted to the post of the administrator without proper training by culture and tradition. Nowadays, they are promoted to such exalted posts by the votes of the people, who are themselves fallen in the rules and regulations of life. How can such people select a proper man when they are themselves fallen in the standard of life? Therefore, by the influence of the age of Kali, everywhere, politically, socially, or religiously, everything is topsy-turvy, and therefore, for the sane man, it is all regrettable. Translation: the so-called administrators are now bewildered by the influence of this age of Kali, and thus they have put all the state affairs into disorder. Are you now lamenting this disorder? Now the general populace does not follow the rules and regulations for eating, sleeping, drinking, mating, etc., and they're inclined to perform such anywhere and everywhere. Are you unhappy because of this? So this continues the description of the age of Kali, which is cause of lamentation for the cow and the bull. Here the bull is asking the questions to the cow, but they both ultimately lament for this position of Kali Yuga. Here the previous verse talk about the brahmanas and how they also become unqualified for performing their duties to society. Here we have the kshatriyas discussed. They are equally unqualified to do their job. So here the word kshatra, bandhu, is used. Bandhu means a friend. So it's a polite word for showing that the person isn't qualified. So he's a friend of a kshatriya, not a kshatriya. So this means he's unqualified to be a kshatriya, actually. He's not got the proper qualities. And the kshatriya, of course, is described in the Bhagavad Gita of having different gunas or qualities, such as fearlessness and fighting, generosity, etc. So they are designated by their varna to do certain jobs like ruling the country, governing, administrating. They are the managers of the society and they enforce the laws. Ultimately, for the protection of the population. So that's what the kshatriya does. Kshatra means he protects the citizens. So one needs a qualified person to do this, just as one needs qualified persons to carry out the functions of a brahmana. So the occupation is related to the qualities of the person. If the person has the proper qualities, then he can perform the activity. Yeah. So in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions about the varnas divided by or distinguished by guna and karma, qualities and activities. So we have activities of a varna, such as teaching for the brahmana, and then we have qualities of a brahmana, and the two things go together. And that's so for everyone in society. And it's not only for varnashram that this is necessary. It's necessary for everything in life, even if it's not a Vedic system. We have qualifications, and then we have gunas that make one qualified, and then one can do certain types of activities. Yeah. So this is often stressed in the Vedic literature, that consideration of qualification, adhikar, is very necessary for doing anything. And if you have the proper qualification, then you could do the activity very nicely. And if you're not qualified and you try to do the activity, then it's a failure. So in this way, things can be judged according to qualification. If you act according to qualification in a certain job, that's good. If you don't act according to qualification, bad. You're going to have problems. Yeah? So that adhikara, qualification, is very, very necessary for everyone. So we, and of course, we have it's made a little easier because in the varnashram system, what's the qualification? Then they give the qualities. This person should be like this. This Brahmin should be like this. Kshatriya should be like this. Vaishya like this. Sudra like this. And give the qualities. And people are qualified. Then they can perform those particular duties. So it is disastrous if a person pretends to have a qualification which is higher than his actual qualification. That he cannot do that job properly. He will fail. So that's called bad quality. He's got a bad quality. It's a fault if he does so. In certain circumstances, in the varnashram system, it is allowed. You can take a lower occupation. So kshatriya may act as a vaishya. Sometimes if it's a problem, or a brahmana could act as a kshatriya or a vaishya also. Under certain circumstances. But normally, they act exactly according to their qualification. If they act too low, generally it's considered to be lazy. You have high qualification, but you act as a sudra. There's some menial service when you could do something much greater than that. Then that's considered to be lazy. And if you act too high, that's a fault of pride. We think we're better than we are. And then we strive for that position, but ultimately we fail to perform properly and we just cause disturbance to everyone. And so generally you have to act according to your qualification. So that's why in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says you have to act within your varna and your duties. And don't go beyond that or under that, exactly according to your duties. So that is the qualification. And so that's, of course, true not only for the Varnashram system, but for society in general. You cannot say you're a doctor if you don't not qualified. If you do, then you get arrested. You try to do operations when you kill everybody that you operate on. You know, it's not going to be successful. So they have qualifications for people, and you have that qualification, you've got the degree, you can do that. If you got a qualification for a lawyer, you can be a lawyer. Qualification for a doctor, you can be a doctor. Qualification for a teacher, you can be a teacher. So even in the normal material world, we like to think of people in terms of qualifications. In a broad way, this is what they have higher education for, to give you qualification to do certain types of activities. Unfortunately, this system often fails, because even if they get their qualification by a degree, they're still hopeless and they can't do anything. That's also there. So, in any case, acting according to qualification is very, very important within the material world. And if it's not done, then we have disaster, as we have in Kali Yuga. Instead of the Kshatriya, we have the Kshatra Bandhu, the friend of the Kshatriya, trying to rule the country when he's not qualified to do so. So it creates big disturbance. Yeah? It makes a terrible society. We have the same principle in bhakti. You act according to qualification. And we see there are many stages of bhakti, from shraddha, nishtha, ruchya, sakti, bhava, and prema. So we're qualified for a certain level. And according to our practice, we get to a certain level. And then we have to act according to that level, that qualification. And if we try to act above that level, that's considered to be a fault. So if you're doing sadhana, you cannot pretend you got prema or bhava. If you're a madhyamadhikari, you cannot pretend I'm an uttamadhikari. So even within bhakti, we have this idea of qualification. We act according to our particular level of advancement, and we don't go beyond that and try to imitate. This creates a problem for ourselves. It creates a problem for everybody else as well. And of course, we shouldn't just try to do, if we're qualified on a higher level, we shouldn't go to a lower level. We're trying to advance, not to degrade ourselves. So therefore, we should always aspire to get to a higher level. And that naturally takes place. But we cannot be over ambitious and imitate a higher level when we're on a lower level. So we become steady at one level before we go to the next level. That's even so within the broader context of bhakti and the rest of the society. Some people are only qualified for karma yoga. Let them get fixed in karma yoga and follow all the nice rules and become regulated and control their senses and act according to the Varnashram system, etc. When they get really fixed in this, then they can strive to become a little bit detached. And then, when they're very detached, they're qualified for jnana and yoga. But they can't do that unless they're at the proper level. So that is why in the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna thinks, I don't want to fight the battle, I'll give up my duty as a kshatriya. And what's he want to do? He wants to lay down his weapons and act like a brahmana. But then Krishna says, you can't do that. You're not qualified for that. You're not a brahmana, you're not a jnani, you're a kshatriya. So it's a fault. This is a fault of qualification. So you can't jump from one varna to the next, and you can't jump from one process to the next without having qualification. So you can't do jnana yoga and study the Vedanta Sutra unless you're qualified by sattva gun. You don't have that qualification, it's a disaster. No. Similarly, the ashramas. If you're not qualified to be a brahmachari, then disaster. So, of course, the regular system, sudras are not qualified to be brahmacharis. So they can't study the Vedas. The other castes can, and mainly the Brahmanas can do that. Everybody's society, the Varnashram system is very merciful. Everybody's qualified to be a Grihastha. So the Sudras, the Vaishya, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas are qualified to be Grihasthas. But then the next one, Vanaprastha, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Brahmanas can do that. Sannyasis, only Brahmanas can do that. So we got, you know, qualification for each of these. And if we jump up without the qualification, disaster. We fail. So, of course, that's the Varnashram system. Then we get to the Varnas, the Ashramas, and then we get to the different yogas, Akarma Yoga at the bottom. If you get really fixed in that, and you get fixed in Nishkama Karma Yoga, then you're ready for Jnana Yoga, Astanga Yoga. However, Bhakti Yoga is quite different. It's independent of the Varnashram system. So it doesn't depend on the gunas. It depends only on faith. Qualification for bhakti is faith. Qualification for jnana is sattva-gun, Brahmins, etc. And qualifications are quite different for bhakti. It's faith. So and the faith could arise in a sudra, kshatriya, brahmana, a vanaprastha, sannyasi, brahmachari, or mlecha, somebody outside the Varnashram system also. Faith could arise anywhere. So the qualifications are quite different. This is where we get a conflict between the people following Varnashram and the people following Bhakti. So the people following Varnashram says, what is this? You're people practicing Bhakti and they're not even in the Varnashram system. They're Muslims or something, or mlechas and foreigners or whatever. Useless. Because it's completely different. The qualification is completely different. It doesn't rely on that system at all. So this shows the independence of bhakti. So faith is a qualification here, but as I said, even within bhakti, then we have to go through these different levels and act accordingly. So we have kanishtas, madhyamas, and uttamas, and we have to act according to our qualification. So the immediate goal for the Vaishnava is to get to the madhyam level, beyond the kanishta level, and from there to the uttama level, but we cannot jump and imitate the higher level. So we have to become fixed in one level before we go to the next level. So in this way, ultimately, the basis of bhakti is quite different in qualification for the other processes. In other words, the qualification for going from one stage to the next is how much attraction we have for Krishna. That's the qualification. So Shraddha is the initial qualification, a little bit of attraction. So that we'll accept the scriptures, and accept to follow the scriptures, etc. Then we increase that attraction for Krishna, and then we can get up to Nishta stage. More attraction, Ruchi. More attraction, Asakti. Greater attraction, Bhava. 100% attraction, Prema. So that's the qualification. So that qualification is quite different. This is all spiritual. It's got nothing to do with material gunas, which causes qualification otherwise. Even in the material world, outside the Varnashram system, to become a doctor, it's a material qualification. Based on, you know, intelligence, memory power, skills, and this way and that way, all depending on material gunas. Bhakti has got something to do with the soul, the Atma. Qualification of Atma is the concern here, not the gunas that you have. So the qualification in bhakti is how much attraction the jiva has for the Supreme Lord. They're both spiritual particle, and Supreme Lord, the big spiritual entity. That attraction, how much you're attracted. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it's the nitya dharma of the jiva to be 100% attracted. Prema, that's our nitya dharma. That's our eternal position with Krishna. But, unfortunately, when we're in the material world, we start out with zero, then we may get 0.001% attraction to the Lord, or 0.1%, or 1%, or 2%, like this. So, it's not complete attraction. which is our, we say our natural state is a little bit because of ignorance and attraction to Maya. So we have to increase that attraction. So the process is simply to follow sadhana bhakti. Then our qualification increases, increases, increases. That means our attraction to Krishna increases, and accordingly we go through different stages. And if we try to imitate the higher stage, this is considered to be disastrous. So that is why acharyas always criticize people who try to imitate a person on bhava or prema. Imitate the symptoms of those persons and their position. It's unsteady. And it is unbeneficial for that person. It creates offense for them. And it's disturbing for the rest of society. So therefore we cannot go beyond our position. But very nicely, our means of advancement is simply to depend on bhakti. It doesn't depend on external factors. So the nature of bhakti is such you can do any place, anywhere, any time, any condition, any body. We can always advance. So if we are in society, we can do it. And if we're householders, we can do it. If we're now sannyasis or babajis or whatever, we can do it. If we're students, we can do it. If we're children, we can do it. So very, very flexible. If the faith is there, you can increase that bhakti in the jiva all the time. And you don't need things. Of course, we say, okay, offer a leaf, a fruit, a flower, but almost everybody can get a leaf and a fruit and a flower to offer to the Lord. You can say, well, I don't have a deity, but you could do it even mentally. So we have the story of the Brahmana who offered everything mentally to the Lord because in his, he was very poor. Brahmana was very poor, but he had a, he wanted to worship the Lord. So then he heard a lecture by one Brahmana who said that actually you don't need anything to worship the Lord because you can do it mentally. And in your mind you can meditate on worshiping the Lord, and when you're meditating you can offer so many wonderful things to the Lord. So I said, this is equal to offering things externally. So the Brahmana was very, very enthusiastic and happy by that, because he says, now I can worship the Lord even I don't have anything. So he sat down and meditated. So he meditated on worshiping the Lord, and then he was able to gather all wonderful offerings for the Lord. He meditated on using gold pots to gather Ganga water, even though it's all mental. So he'd carry the water in gold pots. And he would bathe the deity. He would offer nice clothing to the deity, ornaments made out of diamonds and rubies and emeralds, and all sorts of things. Nice clothing, and nice food. He could offer any food in the world in his mind. So this is what he did, and he was very enthusiastic. So he was meditating on cooking the sweet rice, boiling up the milk and with the rice in it, putting the sugar in it, boiling it, took it off the stove, and it was meditation. And he was carrying it to the offer to the deity, and then his thumbs got stuck into the sweet rice, up, and it burned him. And he put it down. And then he broke his meditation because of that. And then he looked at his fingers; they were burned. They were actually burned. Meanwhile, Vishnu was looking at all this with Lakshmi, and he was laughing. So Lakshmi asked, "So why are you laughing like that?" We said, "Well, look, this Brahmana—he's burned his fingers and preparing sweet rice for me." But then he says, because of this, his intense meditation on me and his devotion to me, he is qualified for Vaikuntha. So in other words, that meditation on offering things to the Lord is equal to actually offering things physically, like offering sweet rice and cooking it in the kitchen. Instead of that, you do it all by meditation and you offer it to the Lord. The Lord is equally pleased because of the devotion, not the article, but the devotion behind it. So therefore, even if you don't have anything, if you're like in Russia under the
communists and they were put in jail, whatever, what could they do? They couldn't do anything except everything in their mind, offer everything in their mind, worship the Lord in the mind. Yeah. Or if you're in prison, what do you do? you can't, don't have anything there. You do everything in the mind. So if there's no possibility of anything, then you can do everything in the mind and still you can be successful. But even easier way than that in Kali Yuga is chant the name of the Lord. It doesn't even require having to intensely concentrate with the mind. You simply chant the name of the Lord. That does not require leaf, fruit, or flower even. It doesn't require money. It's free. We don't charge for the mantra. And you can say it any place, any time, beyond all rules. So chanting the name of the Lord is actually the Yuga Dharma for Kali Yuga, beyond time and place. So this is the way in which we can advance towards Krishna, get higher and higher qualification, independent of everything in the material world, time, place, articles or whatever, facility, no facility, whatever. Right? We can continue the chanting process and attain the Supreme Lord. So, therefore the devotees should think of their own qualification and try to reach a higher qualification. Yeah. Just as in school, we go through the first grade, second grade, third grade, fourth grade, fifth grade, whatever. So if we're very unambitious, then we'll say, okay, maybe I'll get to the fifth grade and I'll just stop there, or whatever. Yeah. But better if someone's more ambitious is at least I'll get to the 12th grade. Get high school graduation, at least I'll go that far. More ambitious people say, oh, let me go to college, 4 years of college, and get a university degree like that. One is more ambitious, then we go for a graduate degree, like a PhD or something. So the devotee should also be a little ambitious, and strive for the ultimate, the highest goal, and also strive for the intermediate goals on the way. So we go through anartanavritti, nishtaruchi, asakti, bhava, prema. So we should be aware of our progress, and we should also be aware of the goal. And for that, of course, we have knowledge coming from scripture to help us define everything very nicely. So in that way we can succeed. In spite of the fact that, as we see in this verse and the other verses around here, Kali Yuga is completely disturbed. Dharma is almost lacking. There's only one leg of the bull left, one quarter of proper Dharma left, and the earth is not cooperating with the human beings anymore. So in other words, we get a lot of Adibhautika and Adi-Atmaka and Adi-Daivaka miseries on us. Weather miseries, nature miseries, plus mental miseries, plus physical miseries. All these are prominent in Kali Yuga. On and also social level also. Individual and then society level. All these things are problematic. Still, we can do bhakti yoga and we can chant the holy name. So we got a solution for the problems of Kali Yuga. Any question?
So in Bhagavad Gita we're hearing that Krishna tells Arjuna that you should perform your own duty, even though it's imperfect, rather than perform another duty, even though you can do it perfectly.
Yeah.
So whenever I heard that, I always thought, well, if you can do something else perfectly, it means...
Then you're qualified for that duty instead. Yeah.
If you're doing the wrong thing, if you're duty is imperfectly. So I guess the question would be, by what criteria do you understand what our duties really are? Is it simply the result, or there are other factors?
Yeah, well, result would be, we say the end result may be the final testing factor, but it's a little bit misleading because sometimes you get an immediate result. Say, oh, I'm very good at this because I got the money, therefore I'm good at this because I earned a lot of money, whatever. So we may see one result we're getting, which is successful, but we're not seeing the other things also. So we'd have to see, get a complete picture and see, are you successful in all ways in that particular job, like management? You may succeed in one level of getting a lot of money for the company, but you may fail in other respects of keeping the people in the company happy, and they all quit. So you know, you have to see everything, not just one factor. So you can say, I'm doing it perfectly. You may think you're doing it perfectly, but other people will then judge you and say, no, you're not doing it perfectly.
I guess the management system, the ultimate goal is to please Krishna.
Yeah, ultimately, yeah, which also operates independently of the whole system, because no matter, even if you're not in the system, you can please Krishna. That's why we need one scripture. We get the general levels and whatever, and then we need devotees who can also advise us, because we can start interpreting the scriptures. Say, well, I'm at this level, but actually we're not at that level from the eyes of other people. So if we have devotees, then they can act as the neutral judge of our real position in terms of devotion. So it's not just scripture, but we need scripture. We also need devotees who can give us good guidance, practical guidance in that regard.
I was just wondering, in relation to Madhavan's question about doing duty. My understanding is, like in the first chapter, Arjuna says to Krishna, I'm not going to do this because killing my superiors will be simple.
Yeah.
But then that verse specifically is pointing out that Krishna's explaining to him that actually you're a chapter, so your duty is to kill. And you know, because Arjuna's saying, I'll be overcome by system, we'll overcome us. If we do, if we kill,
yeah.
Krishna will overcome us.
Yeah.
But Krishna's saying, no, if you don't do your duty, sin will overcome you because you're a chapter. Yeah. Therefore, if you do this, there's no sin for you because it's revealed.
Yeah, so, of course, arguments went back and forth, and we could say, well, it's sinful to kill, but then as a kshatriya, killing is allowed in certain circumstances, and even not for a kshatriya, other people also. If someone's burning down your house, if you get attacked, you can use violence. So it's not just for the kshatriya. Anyone, there are certain circumstances you can use violence, but the kshatriya himself, his nature is, he's not afraid of fighting. So if he's challenged, he fights. And in this case, the side of Arjuna and the Pandavas was Dharma side. They were fighting for Dharma, which is what the Kshatriya is protecting. So therefore, there was no fault on his part if he fights for Dharma. In fact, that's his duty to fight for Dharma. So therefore, no, we shouldn't consider sin at all in that case. And the other reason is obviously he's a friend of Arjuna. If Krishna was his friend, so if Krishna says do it, that's the higher order. Even it's not just Dharma, it is order of Supreme Lord. So you follow the order of the Lord out of devotion, not because of Dharma. So that's another factor there with Krishna and Arjuna.
And then like not to do his Dharma would be sinful. That's the point.
Yeah. So in the normal system, you act according to your duties, your karmas or whatever like that, then that's considered punya. And if you neglect that, it's considered a sin. So generally we have sins of two types. omission, we don't do our duty, that's considered a sin. And the other way is we do the bad activity, the vikarma. So the akarma is a sin, and the vikarma is a sin. Not doing your duty as a kshatriya, vaishya, brahmana, etc., that's a sin. And then to do the forbidden activities, like killing unjustly or whatever like this, these are the vikarmas. So both are considered to be sinful. So if you don't act properly according to your varna, that's a sin also. So this is what we call bhava-bhas. It's a dull reflection of a higher stage. You can manifest on the lower stage. And even in asakti stage, you can almost have a vision of the Lord. It's like a reflection in your heart of Krishna. But it's not actual bhava itself, so it's a precursor. So even beginners can have some, they may cry, or whatever, when they hear the name of Krishna or see the deity or whatever like that, but they're not really practicing at all. So this is an abhas again. So that, nothing wrong with that, but it's not something you want does artificially also. So people who do it artificially, they're the ones who are, we criticize having abhas, the wrong type of abhas. The other is simply an immature person who has preliminary symptoms that look like that, but they're not the actual thing, but nothing wrong with that because they're not trying to be devious in imitating.
Yeah.
Well, we don't call it bhava or whatever, but it's an abhas of that.
So it's a symptom of sincerity.
Yeah.
It's not. Yeah. Like even if a Krishna bhakta can have.
Could have. Yeah. So on the other hand, we shouldn't assume that he's an Uttamadhikari here. He's in prema because of that. You know, we have to see the other aspect of him also and see that it is only an abhas, a reflection.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the wonderful explanation. I want to ask a question about the different level of devotion. You explained that in the material world there are different levels. People can go PhD, university, and recognize. But in spiritual life, no one comes and tells you, okay, you are in this level, therefore you go to the next level. Uh-huh. Or nobody is having an exam and say, okay, if you do this exam, you can understand what level. Of course, the ocean service, you know, I can wash a bottle all my life, it's not a problem. I purify myself. But let's say, instead of washing the bottle, I can write a book. If somebody doesn't tell me that I continue washing the bottle all my life, I can affect your life, but maybe not the best thing for me to do. So who is telling us, okay, you are in this level, you are in this level, before you go to the next level, like in karate or martial arts, you have different belts. So you wear, belt and brown belt and then black belt, but here there's no belt.
Okay. So, well, we borrow from the Varnashram system for some levels. So we have brahmacharis and grihastas and sannyasis, which are like the belts in terms of ashrama. But that doesn't actually, that's external, that's got nothing to do with spiritual advancement. So spiritual advancement is independent of ashramas. You could have a Uttamadhikari, brahmachari, grihasta, or sannyasi, it doesn't matter. So that's an external type of thing. In terms of bhakti, it's very internal. So it's somewhat difficult to judge the different levels, but we have, let's say, Shraddha, Sadhu Sangha, Bhajanta Kriya, Anartanaviti, Nishtaruchya, Sakti Bhava, Prema. Those are the levels. And then we can also have the levels Kanishta, Madhyaman, Uttama. So we can put but in our bhakti, we take the Kanishta as being actually before the Shraddha, because that Kanishta is not a real devotee yet. And when he gets real Shraddha, then it begins pure bhakti. So then it becomes a Madhyama. So then Madhyama continues all the way from Shraddha all the way into Bhava. So that, therefore we get Madhyama with many stages in it, and then we get Bhava and Prema, so that's the Uttama stage up there in the top. So our main concern is the Madhyama stage and those different levels. So within that, it's not a matter of what service you do. You could take any service. You could be in Bhava or Prema or Kanishta or Madhyama and wash the pots or whatever, it doesn't matter, or do any of these things. Then again, we have things like deity worship. We have to be second initiated, so we got standards that way. So initiation is another type of standard. So you can't get initiated unless you're steady in bhakti. Yeah, so you have to follow the regulated principles for what? How long? 1 year? At least? Or whatever it is. Chant 16 rounds for 1 year at least. So that's your first initiation, and then maybe, I don't know what the qualification second, maybe it's 5 years or whatever. The different gurus have different levels for that. So they're, in one sense, trying to judge your qualification of steadiness by initiation also. So that's one level of trying to judge it, but it's slightly subjective according to the guru also. Other than that, then we have the initiation is not a foolproof method also, because so many people take initiation and they're not steady at all, and then they fall from that level. So ultimately, it's the responsibility of the individual. We are the gardener of the tree, of the plant of bhakti. We cultivate the seed, we sprout it, etc. So there has to be introspection on the part of each devotee to see if the plant is growing at least. And if it's growing, then they'll go through the stages, and hopefully everyone gets up to nishta at least, and then ruchi and asakti like that. So if that's a responsibility of each individual. Then we'll have, of course, general guidelines which a manager or temple president will institute, and you see somebody is not steady at all, then he's not fit to stay in the ashram. He has to stay outside or something like that. So there's broad categories of judgment, but the details, let's say from nishta through ruchi to asakti, not so much well defined, at least within our movement.
Hare Krishna. You're speaking obviously about not jumping up to higher levels that we're not ready for, and this is pretty obvious, I think, and any time maybe I've just unconsciously done that, you kind of get thrown out of balance pretty quickly. But how do we understand the practice of Raghunuga Bhakti? I heard a Hindupadri lecture recently, and I think he said that we're not actually qualified for Raghunuga Bhakti until we get gotten rid of our material desires. Because obviously he tried to take on board the mood of Raghunuga Vrindavan while we're not fully ready for that, and that's the bit of an imbalance there as well. So obviously there's
yeah. Well, I suppose we can say that the qualification in the scripture, and like nectar devotion, is this strong desire to follow after the residents of Vrindavan. So we can think we do have it, but then maybe we don't have it. So that's where the illusion could be. That we think we're qualified to practice Raghunuga, but actually we don't have that strong desire because we still have so many material desires. So definitely we do have to have some steadiness in our practice. Of course, theoretically, one could start with Shraddha and do, you know, Raghunuga all the way through, probably because one previous birth we are already advanced or whatever. But in terms of present day, we do have to have steadiness at least in our bhakti to, even if we cannot practice Vaidhi bhakti properly if we're not steady, what to speak of Raghunuga. So Raghunuga is a little more difficult in one sense because it's internal and it requires a lot of smarana. So in that sense, a little more difficult for people. Of course, it's said to be quicker also because of the concentration on a particular rasa, a particular form, etc. But still requires internal sadhana, which many people are not qualified or they find difficult to do. So therefore, if they try to imitate, it becomes like a shell imitation. And so Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said one thing in Krishna Samhita that of course, for the you think you're qualified and you're not, and you try to do it, that's a problem, that's a fault. The guru, who also gives unqualified people the Raghunuga or their sarup or whatever identity, when you're not qualified, he's also at fault. Okay? So both people are at fault in that sense if they're not acting according to, judging according to qualifications. So you should not give to a person if he is unqualified. So if the guru does that, he gives to unqualified people, that's considered to be a fault on his part. And if the person on his part, he's not qualified, but he's eager for something beyond what he can do, then that's his fault also. And so both become faulty. One offense in bhakti is to class people according to their varna. It's an offense, actually. Okay, of course, that's from the traditional point of view. A person was born as a Brahman or as a Sudra, so when he's a Vaishnava, we say, oh, he was a Sudra, we say, or he was a Brahmana, or he is a Kshatriya, or whatever. So that's considered offense to identify Vaishnavas according to birth or whatever like that. But a carryover of that is also, we identify Vaishnavas according to their occupation, even in ISKCON. So we're limiting ourselves to classifying them according to Varna, and then obviously the higher Varna is considered superior, so then, you know, that's considered a superior Vaishnava. So that's also offensive, because the quality of the Vaishnava is independent of the Varnas, its attraction to Krishna. You could be a Brahmana in society, but you could be a Mayavadi. So it doesn't make you a better devotee to be a Brahmana. It's because you're born as a Brahmana or you're practicing as a smarta Brahmana. It doesn't make you a better Vaishnava. It can be making aparadi also. So to rely too much on these classifications is not proper. On the other hand, for practical service, we try to engage everybody according to their qualities. So in that sense, we can say we're giving them a Vaishya occupation. They like to make money for Krishna. Okay, fine, let them make money and sell things for Krishna or whatever, do business for Krishna. Yeah? They may already be doing that in the material world anyway. So let them do that and use their money for Krishna, donate it to Krishna, etc. Or if they're more philosophical, let them write and do explain things, yeah, to people according to their ability. Yeah? Some people maybe not qualified, let this work, do their work like that. So they may not be qualified to lecture or do other things even. So we can engage them like that, but that should not be a limitation on their advancement in bhakti or in any way criticize them or denigrate them by identifying them according to, you know, low varna, high varna, etc. So in other words, it's not an absolute designation in terms of bhakti. And they shouldn't be attached to those labels also. To do other things.
Yeah. Sometimes it can feel a little bit like hard to assign the, like it can get a bit confusing, like what someone calls their psychophysical nature.
Some people may be skillful at things, may not like to do it also. So they, because you're skillful at it, they'll engage you in that, but you really don't like that service, you'd like to do something else. So, you know, that's also there.
Really excellent at it.
Well, as I said, we shouldn't be too attached to the labels, especially in the modern world, because everybody's a mixture, a very great mixture, and the varnas really can't be defined so clearly even in the modern world. If we were to try to do it, everything's a mixture of something and something, you know? So there's no pure kshatriya, no pure brahmana or vaishya or whatever, they're all mixture. There may be a sudra mixed with a vaishya, or a kshatriya mixed with a vaishya, or a brahmana mixed with a vaishya and kshatriya like this, so, yeah. I think it's a very flexible type of label, and people can change. Also, as they advance in age, they may change their preferences also. So we can't really fix a person and, you know, their occupation or their duties in one area, because they can change over years also, as well as what they like to do and what they're good at may be different. So it's flexible, and they there has to be introspection on the part of the person also. So he, what is favorable for his advancement in devotional service. Basically, that's what it is. So maybe what is skillful, he's skillful at, could do, maybe that's good for his advancement. But what he likes to do may also be good for his advancement. According to the person, it may be different as well. So that has to be considered. Okay.
Is this in relation to what Ivan said about Raghunatha Bhakti and maybe taking on and having a feeling that he's got to do devotional service and how you mentioned, I think, it's in relation to Siddha Swaroop, like, that for example, some gurus and Devotee are not, they give their disciples away their original.
Yeah, so that's part of Raghunatha.
Yeah, but as far as I know, Prabhupada there is called.
No. Well, it's a process. It is there. The Siddha Pranali process is there. But then, generally, from Bhaktisiddhanta to Srila Prabhupada, it's not really. We don't take that as a foolproof method of guaranteeing your sarup or anything, because it's a matter of your qualification, your development, etc. And even if you didn't get it, by Krishna's mercy, you will get whatever you get in the spiritual world. So it's not a mechanical process ultimately.
I'm just saying that because I've seen it taking. The teachings of
Indra
Prabhu,
absolutely. Okay, Hare Krishna.